We get it. You want to raise your testosterone, but do any test boosters actually work? And you should know, Test X9 does. And we show you how at LegacySups.com with the links to clinical studies on each of the 9 key ingredients. No bull, no bro science, just facts. Test X9 is NSF certified, third-party lab tested, and made in the good old US of A. Level up your strength, energy, libido, and drive now with Test X9 from Legacy Sports Nutrition. If you want to really level up, go for the ultimate test stack, adding a T-Assist, a pro-grade estrogen inhibitor and test enhancer, and the best-selling sleep aid, the Recovery PM, and see why improving your sleep is the key to unlocking your mental and physical potential. Guys, did you know the majority of testosterone release occurs while you sleep? Well, that's why we put this stack together and why it really works. Stop settling for average. Go to LegacySups.com and use the promo code DrTom, D-R-T-O-M, for 10% off your entire order if you subscribe and have it shipped every 30 days. You can still get the discount each and every single time. Brought to you by 3-time world heavyweight champion Nick Aldis and 10-time world champion Nicky James. And you guys, Nick developed and uses this product himself, so you know that they really work. LegacySups.com. That's LegacySups.com. Use the promo code Dr. Tom and level up with Legacy.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Dr. Tom Pritchard has joined me right now. And Tom, I had an opportunity to talk to you earlier, and I expressed my feelings as to the treatment you received at the hands of the Dirty White Boy. And I know that the millions of wrestling fans who are watching right now join me in wishing you revenge, hopefully in the near future.
Gordon, a lot of things have happened to me in my professional wrestling career. I've had a lot of people jump me from behind. I've had 3 concussions. I've had broken bones, but never in my life have I had someone come up here and have a lady with a black eye ask for me, not once, but twice, to come out here and ask for my help. And when I came out to this set, I came out here to find out what the situation was. Not only did you come back and ask me, but Charlie Platt came back and asked me. She has said she's got a black eye. The Dirty White Boy beat her up. Well, I wanted to find out what the deal was. I came out and I asked her, what happened right here on this set? Right here on this set. And you know, I've been deceived before. I've been deceived one too many times this time, White Boy. Because not only did you hang me from the turnbuckle out in that ring, and not only did you try and end my career, but you tried to end my life, pal. When I was sitting there choking and coming within an inch of my life, I kept thinking, and my life flashed before me. I said, what am I doing out here right now? Well, I'm going to tell you, when I see you, you're going to know that you're a man wanted dead or alive, because that is what I'm coming after, a piece of you. And if it takes a noose, if it takes a baseball bat, that's what I'm going to do. I don't care anymore. If you want to beat somebody up, pal, don't do it to a woman. Do it to me, to my face, because I'm going to do it to you, to your face, and there's not a thing you can do about it.
Huh. I wouldn't take $1 million right now to be the dirty white boy, I'll guarantee you that. More action upcoming.
Hello and welcome to Take It to School with Dr. Tom Pritchard. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, the star of the show, former WWE World Tag Team Champion, 8-time Smoky Mountain Wrestling Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest trainers ever in the history of the business, the Doctor of Desire himself, Dr. Tom Pritchard. Dr. Tom, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great today, John. Thank you for always asking, especially on a fall night like this. It kind of reminds me of years ago in Birmingham, Alabama, and Anniston, Alabama, and Mobile, Alabama. They were all three of my favorite towns. And in the fall, their leaves are beautiful, and the quaint countryside that we saw was always a memory in my mind. Hell, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm doing great tonight, John.
Nice. I was going to say, man, that's pretty descriptive.
Yeah, of course stuff. It was. I'm trying to tell people how to tell stories, try and teach them how to tell stories, and I really don't even know how to tell a story. But we're trying.
So what's going on in the world of the JPWA?
We're in our sixth week of the last session for 2022, and everybody's working hard. Everybody's doing a great job. And once we're done December 10th, we're done until January.
Nice. And then what does everybody do?
Well, we know I'm taking December off is what I'm going to do, and then we come back in January. You know, they come for four nights a week, 4 hours a night, and then Wednesday, one night a week for 2 hours a night. That's a lot of practice. And for people who also have to do jobs and come in and go from 6 to 10 at night, that can be a lot if you haven't done that in a while and you're working one or two jobs. You know, I admire the people that come in and want to do that. And that's what a lot of our guys do. They come in, get a job or two, and train and do it again. And this class is for 10 weeks. The other three sessions are 12 weeks. So I think not only do they deserve some time off, but I deserve some time off because I'm the guy for all those four sessions. Winter, spring, summer, and fall. There you have it. Yes. It gets cold here in Knoxville.
With that, getting a job or having a job, do a lot of guys do that? They work full time and then they come and train?
Some guys come in and have a job during the day and get off at 3 or 4, come train with us from 6 to 10, go home, get some sleep, and do it again. There's 24 hours in a day. I've heard that before. People say, look, you can, there, it's possible. It's not always easy, but simple. Just schedule your day accordingly. And, you know, some do, some don't.
Guess it depends on how bad you want it too, right?
I think so. And I think it's certainly it's a different business than I broke into, certainly. But it's also the same in the sense that if you really want to do this and you're looking for something, you'll figure a way out. And even when the bumps hurt on those cold nights, you'll figure a way out. And if it becomes laborious and you're not having fun, that's when you know it's not for you. Because you've got to learn how to work around it and make the most out of your time in the ring. So some guys do, and some guys come for the experience, and I'll give you the same experience. And knowing that you're doing this because you just want to see what it's like. But other guys come in and work hard and work two or three jobs and still manage to come in for 4 hours.
Did you work? Or did you have a job when you were training to be a wrestler back in the
day?
No. Okay.
Wrestling was my job. It was different back then. And so we got sent to a territory and you started working right away. At least that's, I did, 1979.
Right.
LA in 1980. And that back then, that was, some guys had a job, but my job was professional wrestling.
when guys are doing that, and you know, it's a little brutal of a day for them. They're complaining at all? They're saying anything, or they're just
focused? I can tell when people are tired, but there's not a territory for guys to go to where people are running on a Monday through Sunday or Monday through Saturday, whatever it may be. That model doesn't exist anymore. So if you're getting bookings once every 2 months or, you know, once every 2 weeks, whatever it is, if you train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, with Wednesday being the light day, that's similar to a territory. And you're getting your reps in on a daily basis. And then once you're done, we do the advanced class from 3 to 6. And same thing, guys figure a way to make it, or if not, they'll come for the next class. But it's all a matter of, you know, you can look back, and there's a lot of biographies of not just athletes, but entertainers who had to pound the pavement, you know, work a job, and then go to auditions and do whatever they had to do to make it and believe in themselves and get that opportunity. And I read something today about the movie star is dead, because everybody can be on the internet or TikTok or something like this. You ever heard of Juzzy Smith from Australia?
No.
One man band. And
Heath Slater, huh? One man band.
Exactly. But this guy's playing festivals, and he's playing on the streets and playing for tips and things like this. Well, it's kind of like when you're starting out in wrestling. It's the entertainment business. You have to go where you can get booked and get your reps in, listen to different audiences, know what works, find out what doesn't, and see what these guys, you know, study different people from different forms of entertainment. And see if there's anything to steal or take from them.
Do you think the movie star is dead, though? Because I feel like the guys who are the real movie stars, the guys like The Rock and Schwarzenegger, Stallone, I mean, they're movie stars, not these random like YouTube guys, right?
Well, yes. But what I think they were saying is there's no such thing as the people like Jennifer Aniston, who had a series like Friends, and people knew her who watched that series. And that was a form of that program and Two and a Half Men and The Big Bang Theory. Those were programs that I think people were fans of and watched on a regular basis. And you can find those on various channels, sit there and binge watch, and you knew who each character was, and, you know, Cheers, things like that. Watch how the characters got over. What did they do? You might find a trait or something this guy says or something this guy does and make it yours, because anybody can be a star these days. You got a camera on your phone, put something up there and show you doing fantastic stuff. Media, social media. we can watch anything from anything you want on YouTube and other various places. We're instant information, instant gratification, instant everything these days. So I think you can learn from a lot of people. And what makes you unique? What is it about you people are going to want to pay and see? Don't know until you find it. But I know it's not because you did a beautiful sit out or a great arm drag. Do a great arm drag, that's cool. But if you have no feeling or nobody cares about you when you do it, then it doesn't matter. So
that's true. Very true. With obviously the guys that are there, and the gals, they're doing all the training, doing all this stuff. What did you say was the 2 hour one? That was the promo one?
The promo one now? Yeah, 2 hours, 6 to 8. Because I have to come home and do this podcast. Plus, we need a break in between the week. We need, let's do Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, we'll talk, because we need to talk. We need to learn how to talk. Everybody needs to learn how to communicate and tell stories. And I think that gets muddied in the water when you say tell stories. What does that mean? give me something where if I'm switching channels or looking at YouTube and the next video comes on and you're on it, I'm going to listen to it as opposed to click next or get that off. There's a couple guys, and I've talked about this before. Zicky Dice.
Yeah.
I saw him on a random YouTube gimmick. It happened to come up. I was letting just everything kind of roll together. I was doing stuff at the same time, but I heard his promo. I heard him and I glanced up and saw this colorful shirt, this guy, you know, who looked like a gimmick talking, and I listened to the promo. Then I watched this match and I said, okay, he's a gimmick, but I would watch it and I might be compelled to find a place for him,
right?
Or see how he develops and where he lands, where he makes his place. Amp Dominic's another guy. I was talking about this tonight with the guys. He was at Ricky Morton's school and came up out with a spray bottle and had "Ugly Be Gone" written on that spray bottle and said, "I'm here to save East Tennessee with all the ugly people. I'm going to spray everybody with Ugly Be Gone." You know, it had a story. That was his story. You know, Zicky Dice was telling you a story. It wasn't just, "I'm going to go beat you up in a wrestling match. I'm here at this place and we've got a rally going on and I'm right in the middle of it and people love me and whatever he said. I don't recall now. I just remember he had a presence. He captured my attention and people are worried about just reciting words and not putting feeling into it. It's not necessarily the words, it's how the words are said. And Dusty Rhodes with "Hard Times" and many other promos are great to watch because you're going to want to see these peculiar people, these not your average bear kind of guys.
I was talking to a wrestler very recently. Younger guy, was in NXT. Now he's around, he's out and about in the indie world, AEW. I mean, the guy's all over the place, but he was saying that NXT had like an idea for a gimmick and it was like, okay, let's see you do it. Okay, they like the other guy did it better. To me, that doesn't really work because it's not the true character of the guy. You know what I mean? So right. The guy was probably happy because it's like, okay, I'm glad it didn't say the lines right because it's not me. You know, it's not my character.
Right. One of the great things about finding a persona or a character is telling stories and having comebacks and getting something out of you in whatever means necessary. If I've got to piss you off to get an idea or a thought out there, and then it kind of rubs you raw and then you feel it and you get a little angry, you get a little authentic with it. You have to have heard good stories to be able to tell good stories, I think. And another storyteller for me, or at least sound bites, and he's certainly not everybody's cup of tea or taste, but David Lee Roth understood sound bites when Van Halen was in there beginnings. And I think that's part of the contention between Alex and Eddie was the band was called Van Halen, but David Lee Roth got all the attention the majority of the attention. And it's the same thing with this. Jerry Lawler would be entertaining on his promos. He would cut one-liners. He would tell a joke without going and say, "Hey, let me tell you a joke." He would just say it. He would do it. And he would look at him and I couldn't warm up to this guy if we were crewmated together. Stuff like that would just roll off his tongue. He didn't have to think about it. Didn't have to remember it. It was just natural. And that's the same thing that everybody has to do with promos. You try it and you practice. And you get better at it or you get worse at it. And if you get worse at it, maybe you ought to think about doing something else.
Yeah, I feel like, too, a lot of... I don't know, a lot of the guys in to me, NXT, WWE, whatever you want to say, like almost forced into some of the gimmicks and it's not really them. Maybe Triple H could change that a little bit here, but I don't know.
Well, here's the thing.
It works better that way.
I think it does, but you ever heard of Lord Lansdowne?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you know Gorgeous George stole his gimmick from Lord Lansdowne. Okay. Well, who are the guys going to steal the gimmick from today? If they don't watch old school stuff, then they're going to steal it from what they've already seen. It's got to be authentic. It's got to be real. It's got to be natural. You can't just – well, but they've done this forever. You know, Chili McFreeze, The Undertaker.
Yeah,
all that stuff. They've tried, but then it's up to the guy or girl to now – I know this because you think I really wanted to be Zip.
Right, of course.
Yeah, I didn't speak up, but you have to speak up, but you have to know. Yeah. You have to know what story you want to tell and how you're going to tell it. You can't rely on anyone but yourself to tell your story. They may give you a guide, but it's up to you to get that over in your way. And if you're not feeling that, then you better have something else to try. And my philosophy is try a bunch of stuff and keep what works. Don't saddle the guy with a gimmick. Say, you do it, and you do it, and we'll pick the ones that's best. Because that's not, you're right, that's not going to work. That's the issue, I think. With the NIL, next in line stuff. Great theory, great in concept, but you can't force people to have passion for this. Without passion, I think it's going to come across as dry, sterile, not authentic. Too many guys, I've seen it before, come from other sports and look down on what wrestling and wrestlers do. Even sports entertainers, although I guess we can call them wrestlers now. Anyway, whatever.
I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too. And even if we can't, by God, we will. Are you under contract? Anyway, the point is, you have to feel it, and you have to have passion. When you're going to tell guys, hey, just come to our PC, and we'll show you how to do it, and you'll be great. Well, that's not always true. What happened to the guy, Parker Boudreaux?
Yeah, I think he signed with AEW, but WWE released him.
What happened to the guy just recently, the Bodie guy? Where was he from?
He got released, too. Yeah, Bodie Howard. Yeah. I don't know Howard, why.
Yeah.
Big dude, too, yeah.
Well, because they said he was late and they didn't – or the internet said he was late. He was not professional. I could be wrong. I thought that's what they said.
Interesting.
And he was shocked that he got released. I don't know. I've never seen him. Don't know him. So I just read what the internet says. And it's like, well, you have a preconceived notion of what this is, wrestling. And then you get there and you figure out, oh, wait a minute. We actually have to learn something. We actually have to do something before we can get to the next thing. Without the basics and fundamentals, you can't get to the next thing. And I think the expectations of a lot of the athletes, I could be wrong, but this is just my assumption. And I'll go ahead and say I'm the ass in the assumption.
Yeah.
Okay. But maybe you'll find that wrestling fan. Maybe you'll find that guy or girl who connects Jake Logan. Or Logan Paul or Jake Paul or no.
Both Logan Paul, Jake Paul.
Logan Paul. Oh, gosh, I don't even know. Anyway, yeah, Logan Paul. You know, he's obviously looks like a natural. He obviously enjoys wrestling. He gets the performance aspect of it.
Yep.
And the athletic aspect of it. He understands the dynamics. He knows has a clue how it works. Those guys are valuable assets. But how many of those guys are out there?
Not many, yeah.
Yeah, not many. So, I don't know.
That's what they call professional wrestling. It's got to be professional.
Right. And a lot of people think it's easier than it really is, especially if you've never watched it or don't have an appreciation for it. And that's how it goes.
Funny, the guys who were, like, big fans, Pat McAfee, Logan Paul, they seem to do better than some of the guys that are athletes that they just throw in there because they think they were great athletes.
Right. Well, it's because you if you appreciated it for what it was, and then you get the opportunity to do it, and you can appreciate the work you have to do to get it to look the way you want it to look and need it to look, and understand it is the entertainment aspect and not necessarily what a beautiful arm drag, or what, let's say arm drag, because a good arm drag can be great, but a headlock, I mean, it's not that. It is a leapfrog. It is the body language. It is diving off the top rope. No doubt about it. That's the exciting part about it. But those guys feel it more, McAfee and Logan Paul, because I think they do have a respect for the business, and they understand what it is, and they watched it and they knew it, and it's like Tyson. I think Mike Tyson, watching Bruno and those guys growing up in his area, he was a fan, and then he became the champion of the world. And my God, when he came in, the reason he treated it the way he did is because he was having the time of his life, and he was respectful and enjoyed being there. Some of the guys, I think, look down their nose at it and say, hey, they want me because I'm a real athlete, not one of these phony guys. And I think that translates in their work, that they're just going through the motions. They don't know how to feel it. They don't know how to be emotional when they're in the ring. I think they just, again, this is just my assumption. I think people just come sometimes and think, you can show me a couple things and I'm going to be a superstar. Whatever happened to Gable Stevenson?
I heard he's finally back to training, because I know his brother's on NXT TV. His brother is Damon Kemp or whatever. But oh, okay. I heard he's back to training, and that Triple H is hanging the NIL like tag on him. Like, his success is going to breed more. So I heard he's really like backing him, getting, because I heard he wasn't training for a while. I think he got hurt. Now he's back to training again. So Triple H is really putting a lot behind him, I think.
I hope so. I hope he does well. But it's been a year.
I know, it's funny. His little brother's it's on TV wrestling. So okay. I don't know what's
going on. How is his little brother?
Seemed like he was okay.
Okay.
A little green, for sure.
Well, everybody's green. There's no crime being green. Not everybody's going to start it, but okay, cool.
But he was wrestling the Creed brothers. The Creed brothers looked pretty good.
Okay.
Diamond Mind, Ivy Nile, of course, your girl's in there. They look good. He just looked, you know, he'll get there, but he looked a little green, but that's fine.
Yeah, everybody has to go through that process.
I have no idea how many matches he's had either. I don't think he's had many.
Well, somebody asked him if I saw his last match, and I said, I sure hope so. Okay. Boom. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, no, practice, 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 and some will get it, and some will feel it, and some won't.
So, as far as today and today's topic, wanted to talk about a little feud that you had down there in CCW, aka CWF, down there in Birmingham, Alabama area. Obviously, went through Mississippi and a little bit of Tennessee mixed in, but most, maybe even Huntsville, Alabama mixed in. But a little feud with the Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony. You guys had a few tag matches in Mid-South in 85, but really, when we're recording this, it's 11-9, but it wasn't obviously this year. It was back in 1987, so it actually lines up pretty well. It was the first match in CCW, a part of the Tom Pritchard Dirty White Boy feud. You win that one in Birmingham, Alabama by DQ. What are your thoughts on that feud back there, if you can remember it? I know you remember the leaves and stuff and all that in the fall season, but the Dirty White Boy feud.
If I didn't know any better, I would think that was a shot at my memory, and that's okay too, because I blocked out a lot of stuff. The angle with the Dirty White Boy was Robert, well, actually Ron Fuller, had sold the territory. And Eddie Gilbert came in to book. And Eddie brought his brother Doug, Paul Heyman, Pistol Pez, Sid Vicious, who's as humongous.
Yes.
Some other guys in. And Ron Fuller came up to Knoxville. Eddie kept some of us on the crew. I'd known Eddie from Memphis and Tony and Doug had been friends, and Eddie had been friends for a long time too. So we stayed on while Ron took the rest of the crew up to Knoxville. And I remember there are some guys in the business you can work with in wrestling. You can, you have that chemistry with, and Tony was one of them. Tony was and is a hell of a worker. And Eddie said he wanted us to come up with something to put the Alabama title on Tony and do an angle somehow. And I had seen Nick Bockwinkle back in El Paso growing up. There was a guy named, they called himself the Hangman, and he'd come to the ring with the hangman's noose. And after the match, he would always put the noose over the guy's neck and beel him from corner to corner. Well, Hangman beat this guy one day on TV and started to put the noose around his neck. And here comes Nick Bockwinkle and making a big comeback. And Hangman cuts him down and puts the noose around Bockwinkle's neck and beels him from corner to corner. And I always remember that. That was like great visual. And I thought, what if we do this? We'll involve the dirty white girl to screw me for the Alabama championship. I was the Alabama champion. And she's going to chloroform me in a street fight, Alabama street fight. And the next week, I would come out. I would put my hair up under my hat, come out, hit Tony with a board during his match, and I would cut his hair. Tony had some pretty long stringy hair at that time. He says, I probably need a haircut now anyway, so you can go ahead and cut it. So I did. And then the next week, we said, okay, what about if you come up and attack me from behind, put the noose around my neck and take me to the ring and hang me? Eddie says, well, I need something more than that. I mean, that sounds good, but we got to add a little bit more in there. So, okay. What if he hits me with a chair, has a pair of handcuffs,
yes,
puts my hand behind my back, handcuffs my hand behind my back, puts the noose around me and pulls me to the ring and hangs me? Says, okay, I like that. So, we told Randy Colley for some reason. I don't know why Randy knew, but Eddie might have told him. Anyway, I had to get a syringe and condoms.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And bring them to the fairgrounds that night. And Randy Colley put the syringe in my arm and drew blood and put it in the condom because I was going to bite the condom.
Right.
As Tony hung me from the ring with my arms were behind my back and have the blood run down my chin. And Gordon Solie was going to say, he's okay. He's conscious. And he was going to cover it, but he was going to see the blood and react. And we took the blood out, put it in the condom, put it in some warm water in the locker room, in the sink. Well, a couple red flags should have gone off. Number one, condoms were meant not to break. I mean, condoms are not supposed to. That's the idea. And we didn't tie it tight enough. It was kind of like chewing gum anyway. And you tied it and cut the residual off. So the idea was this. The dirty white girl comes out, beginning of the show. She wants to talk to Tom. She has a black eye.
Yep.
Charlie goes back to get me. I won't come out, do a couple segments. She comes out again. Gordon goes back. I come out. The idea is she's going to have me turn my back. Here comes the white boy, hits me in the back. I go down. The referee comes out. And I said, when I go down, please get my glasses. And also, he's going to come out with a condom, put it in my mouth. As soon as he put it in my mouth, I knew I was in trouble because it was chewy. I tried to bite down on it, and there was no way. And then I realized, oh, that's not really a good idea because maybe we should have used a balloon.
Right.
Anyway, so that was what was supposed to happen. And we destroyed the set. When Tony hung me, though, when he put the noose around my neck, even if you pull the rope without trying to tighten the noose, the noose tightens. And we didn't know that because we didn't do rehearsals back then. We didn't walk through stuff. We just did it. So I'm choking the whole way down. And I can't tell Tony anything. My hands are behind my back and I can't pull the rope. Steve Armstrong, I think it was, had a blade because they were all going to save me. The baby faces were going to save me. And he was going to poke the blade or poke the condom with the blade if it didn't break. So when he did, that warm blood that had been sitting in the locker room all night stunk to high heaven. And everybody almost puked.
Gross.
Yeah, oh. It was gross. It was bad. Oh. So we did that, and we thought it was a hell of an angle. But we were at the fairgrounds. So Boutwell Auditorium was being renovated or whatever was going on back then. It was around the time when times were really changing and WWE was on the move. And we were doing the best we could with what we had.
And you were telling me it didn't help really draw any more money or any more people.
Oh, no, we do. They were hanging from the rafters.
Oh.
Yeah, they're hanging from the rafters. They should have been down. They could have come from the rafters and gotten the seats, but they preferred to hang from the rafters. So there are plenty of seats for them to sit, but they were hanging from the rafters. Yeah. Anyway. No, it was tremendous business. See, those things that I tell you off the deal, you're supposed to act like
record.
Who's going to remember? That was, what, 35 years ago?
Yeah.
Who's going to remember how much you drew? We could sit here like everybody else, and I could tell you we drew record houses.
But you would think, like, an angle like that, so many people would be fired up about it. But it caused a little bit of controversy, a little bit of a stir.
Well, I guess it caused a stir with some people, and some people, whatever it was, we did the best we could with it. We had an angle, at least, so we went to the ring. We had something to work towards, and we also did a deal where in Dothan, where Tony hit me in the head with a beer bottle. Eddie was drawing good houses. Eddie Gilbert was drawing good houses back then when he was booking for I don't know how he did it, but he had Paul Heyman, he had Missy Hyatt, brother Doug.
Yep.
And whatever magic he was working, they were coming. Dothan was doing great. Montgomery was doing great. Birmingham was a little bit on the fence. Again, the fairgrounds wasn't in a great part of town, so people, it wasn't like you were coming to the downtown for the Boutwell Auditorium. And for whatever reason, that was Alabama Southern Wrestling. Maybe people were looking for something else back then.
Yeah, what a cool angle, though. Like, awesome. Like, what? Like, I don't know. To me, you would think, like, that's crazy. Maybe the TV station might have thought otherwise, but obviously I thought it was great.
Yeah, well, it's I remember seeing an angle where Terry Funk came and chased the Infernos off the set, the Infernos and J.C. Dykes off the set in El Paso on TV. And the camera followed the Infernos in their mask and gear with J.C. Dykes running out the door, and they kept the door open, and they're going to their car, and Terry comes out, picks up a brick sitting outside the parking lot and throws it at the car, and it hits the back window and dents the car, and you know, of course, the senior paid for it, but you know, it was that kind of stuff where what would you do? You'd really, if you were that hot at them, if they burned you, if they did something, then you're going to get revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. If you've never seen it or felt it and felt what authenticity is, when Dusty Rhodes would cut a promo, he was authentic. Piper, Flair, Arn Anderson. There's some great promo guys out there who believed it because they immersed themselves in it. And everybody's playing a part these days. And it goes back to you can play a part if you lean into the part and believe it. But I think it has to be you. It has to be a part of you that's authentic for people to buy in.
And that angle is great because you guys have street fights, you have I Quit matches, you have the First Blood matches. I mean, you guys have some crazy matches to kind of keep that feud going.
It was, I think, for us, the next step was to turn White Boy babyface in Alabama. And then I left. After that, I left. I was going to Japan in August, but I left a couple months before that and went and hung out in Texas for a little bit. So while that was going on, I think you can't do anything like that these days. It wouldn't work. I don't think people buy into it or care. So I always ask everybody, what's going to get their attention? I think it got people's attention. And I've talked to people who've asked about it through the years. And some guys have told me when they were kids, they cried, which I get it because I saw the violence like that on El Paso TV when they would, hit somebody and they'd be knocked out. And I swear to God, I saw an angle again between the Von Brauners and Saul Weingroff against Terry Funk, where it looked like Weingroff took out this hatchet with this meat cleaver and hits Terry, not in the head, but in the ear. And Terry's ear is bleeding. And it was violent and it was scary and unpredictable. These two big, bald German guys kicking the shit out of poor Terry Funk. I remember seeing it, and the reaction of the people was, my God, this is, they're hurting him. They're killing him. It was only 20 years removed from World War II. You had two Nazis, two bald-headed German portrayed Nazis, and a Jewish manager. 20 years removed from World War II. Nobody can comprehend or relate to that these days, I understand. And I didn't relate to it back then. I just knew Weingroff was a slimy manager.
Right.
And I remembered the delivery, how they did it. And I think they drew a lot better than we did. They cut Terry's hair and they, you know, it was like, we're going to humiliate you. I think the same thing with Dirty White Boy. He was going to humiliate me. And I don't think he meant to kill me, although maybe he did.
Right.
But he was going to, he was going to get revenge for me cutting his hair, and it was supposed to escalate. Can you do that today? I don't know. I really don't know.
When you look at that feud, look back at it, obviously you end up finally in 88, the end of 88, really, or towards the end of 88, you get the win. You win the CWF heavyweight title, and that's kind of the end of the feud there until you guys meet again in the USWA and you meet again in Smoky Mountain. So, I mean, you guys wrestled basically from like 85 to like, I don't even know, I guess it was almost 95, pretty much, almost 10 or 11 years straight that you guys had matches of some sort, whether it was 8-man, 6-man, tag match, 1-on-1. You guys basically had matches for 10 or 11 years.
Yeah, it was, I think, and it's like that today in some places where you work with the same guys and that same crew. You have guys like Carlito and Mike Masters, or not Mike Masters, Chris Masters, and Aaron Stevens, Tyrus, Murdoch, who a lot of them are on the same cards and a lot of working because they know each other. And wherever you can get booked and have that match against the guy you're good, you feel comfortable working with, that's a no-brainer. And White Boy was a hell of a worker, and we had some great matches. And it was a lot of fun when you go out there and don't have to even call anything in the back.
Right.
That was, you know, once again, you know, you can read stuff and see it, and that's the fun part when you get to that point where you don't have to call every little move. And that just comes with time.
What a gimmick, too. Dirty White Boy. Obviously, at WWF, he was TL Hopper, which is horrible, the plumber. But what a gimmick the Dirty White Boy was.
That wasn't a gimmick. He was the Dirty White Boy. I remember somebody saying, well, what the hell? What kind of name is the Dirty White Boy? Well, you know, it was a boss. It was a Boston or foreigner. But Dirty White Boy... I'm just a dirty. Who was that?
Oh, yeah. Is it Boston?
I think maybe, or foreigner. No, it's Boston, wasn't it?
I thought so.
Oh, yeah. Could be. Yeah, check. Anyway, but he was him and Lynn Denton. You know, they were the grapplers, and then they became Dirty White Boys and just took off the mask and put on a couple pairs of different tights and biker boots and came out, and here you are.
Foreigner, actually. Wow. Okay.
Foreigner, okay. He's either Boston or foreigner. So, yeah. And, you know, he lived the gimmick. Bucksnort, Tennessee. Surely to God you've been to Bucksnort. Everybody's been to Bucksnort. Anyway.
Hell
no. You've never been to Bucksnort?
No, never been.
Good. There. Good. I don't think they'd figure you's around them parts.
I think your buddy Mance Warner and Bunkhouse Buck are from Bucksnort, Tennessee.
Bunkhouse is from Bucksnort, and I believe Mance is too. You are correct.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful establishment and a wonderful city. I've been to Bucksnort on numerous occasions. And then you got Dyersburg, Tennessee, too. That's another legendary locale for rough and ready rednecks in Tennessee.
Oh,
yeah. So if you want to go to Dyersburg too, you know, I think a trip down to Tennessee would do you good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Might have to do that. Yeah, for sure.
I'm just saying. Go ahead.
So as we wind it down here, we head towards the finish. Let's hit the plugs. Let's talk about your book, Dr. Tom. Where can everybody get your book?
Well, John, I think you know, yep. But everybody else needs to know that. You can go to jpwrestlingacademy.com and click on training. It'll come up, and you can order from Amazon. You can also check out our next classes, which start in January. You can fill in an application if you like. Come on down. Knoxville is beautiful in January. And Knoxville is beautiful all the time. We have the mountains. We have a lot of things to see here. And training is actually interesting in the winter months. We already have some people who have sent in their applications, and we're looking forward to a good class in January. But that's jpwrestlingacademy.com.
Hey, no one better to get trained by than a guy that trained The Rock, Kurt Angle, Mark Henry, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. Even some guys that are in NXT right now, and girls, of course.
Well, of course, yes. So I'm very fortunate.
So you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. You can follow Dr. Tom on Twitter at Dr. Tom Pritchard. Go to Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com. Visit the JPWA store. Also visit the Dr. Tom store. I love the Wanted Dead or Alive shirt, which is part of a great promo you threw onto Dirty White Boy, telling him he's wanted dead or alive. You're going to kill him, basically.
Well, I didn't say kill, but I did say I'd take a baseball bat.
Yeah.
I did say that you're a man that's wanted dead or alive. And I meant every daggum word I said of it. And even Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream of all people, said, go and throw it with a bath, Gordon with a bath, because he sold it like he should.
Yes, he was basically like, "Whoa, Dr. Tom, whoa,
he wouldn't be the dirty white boy's shoes for $1 million.
Yep.
So there you go.
What else you got going on? Anything else?
You know what? I'm leaving Friday for New Orleans for NWA.
Nice.
Hard times in New Orleans. It's going to be interesting weekend, cool weekend, 2 days, and come back Monday afternoon.
Nice. Sounds good. But thank you, Dr. Tom. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Take It to School with Dr. Tom Pritchard. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.
Charlie, I'd like to talk to Tom Pritchard if you could get him out here.
Well, you want to talk to Tom? My good Lord, what happened to you?
White boy did this to me, and I'd like to talk to Tom, please.
You, well, Mystic, I'm at a total loss, but...
I'd just like to talk to Tom, please, if you could get him out here.
Well, wait a minute. Charlie, can you see if you can find Tom? Well, are you telling me that the dirty white boy did this to you?
Yes, he did it because I didn't help him when Pritchard cut his hair.
Because Tom Pritchard cut his hair, you paid this kind of a price?
Yes, I did. And I just want to talk to Tom, please.
Well, all right. Good Lord. Let's see if we can't get Tom Pritchard out here. Charlie, child, you took an awful blow to the head. Well, all right, please, don't try and talk. That's okay. That's all right. You just remain calm.
Gordon,
well, all I can tell you, Mystic, is Tom Pritchard apparently refuses to come out here. Apparently, he doesn't want...
Can't you do something?
Well, I'm sorry. We've got... No, I'm sorry, honey. We've got a television show to do. I'm terribly sorry. Tom Pritchard has said no, he won't... ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for this interruption, but I must admit I'm terribly concerned about this young lady. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll be back. Let's see if we can't get this straightened out. Ma'am, lady.
Please see if you can get him out here. I just want to talk to him.
Honey, come here a minute. Let me explain something to you. We have a television program we're running, and I'm terribly sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I just want to talk to Tom.
You all right?
Please try. Just get him out here.
I'll tell you what, Charlie, you tried. I'll tell you what. Hold on to that a second.
Let me disconnect myself here.
IFB won't come up. There we go. Excuse me a minute, Charlie. I'll see if I can get a hold of Tom Pritchard. We'll chat.
Okay. All right. Just go ahead. I don't want any hysterics.
Continuing with Continental Wrestling, excuse me, Mystic, but I was not out earlier when you were talking to Gordon. And what's the situation?
I just like to talk to Tom. I just please get him out here.
Lady Mystic, what happened to you? Obviously, very emotional.
sending Charlie Platt back to try and get me. Now you send Gordon Solie out of here, man. It looks to me like you and the white boy got some personal problems, lady. Now listen, wait just a minute here. I told you a long time ago, you didn't need to be hanging around that guy because he had a temper and he likes to blame other people on his mistakes. Now, I'm not condoning nothing. I mean, you look like you're in a little bad shape. And I would never hit a lady, and I don't think it's right to even put your hand on a lady. But to me, what happened? Mystic. I told you that a long time ago. You make your bed, you gotta lie in it, darling. You gotta lie in this bed of life.
I'm sorry, please, Tom, forgive me. I'm sorry, please.
I tried to tell you a long time ago, but you don't have to.
Please, I'm sorry.
I don't know. Somebody else. I know you need some help. Maybe see a rape crisis center or something.
Some help down here. We've got to get some help. Tom. He appears.
I don't know if all the commotion has killed the monitors in the back or not.
I don't know, Charlie, but I'll tell you something. Somebody's got to get some help down there. We've got to get some help down to Tom Pritchard. He may have ruptured with something in his throat, but Pritchard is in a world of trouble here. And, thank goodness people are there. Thank goodness. Frankie the Thumper Lancaster, a host of others. Well, let's see if it's Tom. Well, he appears to be conscious. Look at this despicable. Absolutely despicable, the dirty white boy and Mystic. But it appears that... Is he conscious?
I can't tell. They're all around him.
It's difficult to tell.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah, he is conscious. Well, thank heavens for that. All right, let's get away from this, please. We'll be back as quickly as we can get order.